Hey everybody, welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah and I am here with a quick shot of romance author spotlight edition. And tonight on this author spotlight, I am giving you a look into the world of Lex Martin. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey Leah, thanks for having me.
Okay, Lex Martin is a USA Today bestselling author of Varsity Dads, Texas Nights, and the Dearest series, books she hopes readers love but her parents avoid. A former high school English teacher and freelance journalist, she currently resides in her hometown of San Antonio with her husband, twin daughters, and a bunny named Dandelion. So, Texas, I was assuming, like, were you a Texan for life?
I grew up here, and after high school, I went to Boston for college, and that's where I met my husband. I went to Boston University, and he was at Berklee College of Music, and we had mutual friends, and eventually met right after I graduated, and then we eventually moved to Chicago, which is where he's from. We lived there for several years, then moved to Los Angeles, lived there for several years, and now we're back in San Antonio. We moved here in 2019. We got a house just before all the properties went crazy. So yeah, we're really happy to be back near my family.
Well, Texas to Boston, that's a big change.
Yeah, it was. I just wanted something different. I wanted the, quintessential collegiate experience. I rode crew my freshman year. I tried water polo. I tried fencing. I just wanted that New England experience. It was really fun. I had to bail from water polo from crew because I injured my back really badly. And but yeah, it was a really, I loved BU. I'd still be a student there if I could afford it.
So, writing wise, what drew you to romance as a writer?
I guess I liked romance when I was younger, when I was in junior high and high school. I kind of stumbled into it reading, I think, paranormal romance. And dad used to take me to, and my mom, to the Half Price bookstore. And I just load up on things and would inevitably pick up a few romances and be, scandalized by what was in there. And, but, after college, I had a journalism degree. I taught. I mostly focused on nonfiction and didn't read romance for a long time until I had my twins, and they were really sick and they were in the hospital. And I just found I needed an escape. I needed something to cope with all the trauma we were experiencing. And that's when I picked up, I think it was like Hunger Games and, Colleen Hoover, Hopeless, and books like that. And I had been dabbling with a paranormal YA book at the time and had been writing for maybe 2 years, but I didn't really read a lot of romance. And I think that's one of the areas that potential writers stumble, is they don't read enough of the genre they're trying to write. And that's really when I inundated myself with romance. And it was really just to get through what our family was experiencing at the time. And I just fell in love with it. It wasn't just about coping. It made me happy. And I thought, wow, maybe I should give this genre more of an emphasis. So before Colleen Hoover, there wasn't really new adult. I mean, she pretty much established that subgenre. And so after I wrote a really poorly written YA book that everyone will ever read, except for a few of my good friends, I then wrote my first official book, which was Dearest Clementine, and I set it in Boston, which is where I went to college. And since I had just read Hunger Games, I remember seeing the movie and thinking, she was a little snarkier in the books. At least that was my interpretation. And I missed that when I saw the movie. And so I thought, I'd like to write a character kind of like Katniss, like a snarky girl who has given up on guys for whatever reason. She's not dating. And that's when I came up with this idea of Clementine. And she accidentally finds herself in a romance writing class after she's already written a book. So she's kind of an undercover, anonymously known writer. But she doesn't view herself as a romance writer, and she doesn't think she has enough personal experience to write it. She just feels like she has heartbreak. She doesn't have romance. She didn't have that HEA. And so she bumps into this guy who used to have a crush on her freshman year, but she didn't really know him. And he's the resident advisor, and he offers to help her find some inspiration. And then there's also this mystery in the background. And I, you know, the your first book is really hard to write, but I used Boston as the backdrop because I knew it so well, and you be you really well. And so I used those places to help get rid of some of the sticking points that I had writing the YA book that I'll never show anyone, right? So that was really fun. And then I just got addicted and I had to keep going. So that's
So
how I got into writing romance.
what was that turning point that made you push publish for that first time?
So I was in a small writing group, and all my friends were querying agents. And I thought, okay, I guess this is what I'm supposed to do. But Amanda Hawking had just sold like a million ebooks on her own. I mean, I think they were 99 cents, but my husband forwarded the article to me because he was really excited. He knew I was trying to write. I thought, you know, that's really awesome. So if I can't find an agent, I'll just do this myself, you know. I found that I hated querying. I queried eight people and hated every single minute of it. I felt like I was begging for crumbs, you know. Some really nice responses, but I thought, you know, and my friends went, you know, they queried 100 people, 100 agents, and they got their agents and they published their books. And I thought, I'm just gonna do this on my own. I don't need anyone. People are doing it on their own. I edited the hell out of it. I was really happy, really proud of it, and just went for it. And within 6 weeks of publishing that, a really amazing agent contacted me, and we're still together.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah. She was a blogger
So,
at the time. She was moving into becoming an agent for a company, and now she's got her own shop. Yeah.
if there was a piece of advice that present author you would give past author you, what would it be?
Don't be so precious. I come from a journalism background. I would edit. So because I was a newspaper advisor, I would edit my students' work a lot, many, many times over. And I took that perspective and applied it to romance writing. And so it made me really anxious to be done with the editing process and to actually publish a book. I felt like I needed to spend more time in revisions. And my husband's like, how much are you actually changing on the revision 9, 10, 11, however many times you're doing it? And I go, I don't know, but a few words here and there. And he goes, is anyone going to notice it besides you? And I said, no, probably not. He goes, so just get over that. And you'll probably write more books that way and be happier. And it has taken me some time to get over that, but I think I feel better doing fewer revisions now because I also feel like I know more of what I'm doing. So
Like you
I
feel
would
more
tell myself,
comfortable in it.
yeah, I feel more comfortable. I've read, you know, probably a few thousand romance novels at this point. And so I would tell myself, don't be so precious, you know, let go. Write this book, get on to the next one.
So when you do your series, because you typically do series, you don't
I
do, I mean,
do.
they're standalones, but they're series at the same time. Do
Right.
you are you a pantser or are you a planner? And if you are a planner, do you plan out the whole series or book by book?
I'm a little bit of a plotzer, so I plan a little bit and I pants a little bit. I would say I know where these characters are coming from, their personalities. I really like writing a series because I tend to include future characters in the current book, and it helps me develop personalities and backgrounds on the fly as I'm writing. And then I have that going into the next book. So I'm not working as hard. I'd say the first book of a series is the hardest for me, setting the world, coming up with all the characters and subplots and things like that. But yeah, I have a whole packet of things that I do to prepare for a book. Mostly thinking about a character's want, what they need, their wound, what has hurt them thus far that they're recovering from. And I've written out maybe 5 to 8 scenes of things that I really want to have happen. And usually it's pertaining to the romance. Like, oh, I really want to do a scene where they're at the lake and it's raining and he kind of tackles her into the water and then they kiss, you know. So I have really specific things that I want to see. And yeah, it's like my bucket list for each book.
That
Just
makes
things that make
sense.
me happy, things that I want to include. I try to make them different from book to book and series to series.
But like the plot itself, you kind of just let it flow as it comes to you.
I know usually where how things are going to end. Like I'll know maybe not how it's going to resolve itself, but I'll know, okay, well,
What the solution and
this
resolution is.
character is going to give up X, Y, and Z as a grand gesture to her, and they'll find a way to make it work this way. So I'm not the pantser I used to be. Like I pantsed Dearest Clementine, the first book I wrote, and hated every minute of the revision process as a result, and changed quite a few things. So I feel like I really do minimal big changes now at this point because I have a better feel for how to develop the story. I have, you know, the romance, and I have the subplot or a mystery, and so yeah, it's a little bit of both. It's a balancing act. I have enough to give me structure, but not so much that I feel constricted. I do love, I guess I would describe myself as a discovery writer. I do discover things as I write, and I will have to go back sometimes and add elements like, oh, well, now she's this way, so I need to go back to chapter one and add elements of that throughout threads. And so yeah, I guess it's a balancing act, but I write in a way that makes me happy. I'm not happy when I have to plan every single thing from the get-go. I have written books that way and I
And
have
you
not
feel
enjoyed
stunted in
them.
the
Yeah, I
structure.
do. I feel like I'm wearing clothes that are too tight, you know, and you can't really take a full breath. So this is a happy middle ground, and I feel like my books are a lot better for it.
So I've read a few of your books, and you are a fan of the third act breakup. Like,
I
do
am.
you, when you're reading books, do you feel like it needs the third act breakup?
I almost
What are
always
your
feel
thoughts?
cheated if they don't break up.
Or there's something that
I
happens?
need that catharsis. Like I understand when there's a murder mystery and as a subplot and they don't break up because the guy's trying to kill her and the hero saves her and then, oh, we love each other and we're together. Okay, that's nice, but I still feel a little
Let down.
like I didn't get my money's worth. I'll put it that way. But no shame to the people who enjoy that and no shame to authors who enjoy writing that, but that's just not what I'm going to write. So if you're going to buy one of my books, there is a 99.9% chance there's going to be a third act breakup. I don't want to say I'll never do it because I suppose there's always that time. As soon as I say I'll never do it, then I'll do it. But I don't enjoy that. Yeah. I don't enjoy reading that. I
Well,
mean,
there's it's one of those things that it's interesting to hear authors' thoughts on it because I mean, right now, like the third act breakup is kind of a hot button issue. Like as an older romance reader, like I like a third act breakup. I read a lot of suspense, so there's always a third act something. And so that I like that a lot too, but it's like I've read a lot where the third act it just is kind of meh. And I do, like I do feel let down at the end of the book because I'm like, what, why?
So I have gone back to writing romantic suspense with Stealing Hearts, and It was a challenge to have a third act breakup and the suspense aspect all tie up. But I was really happy with how that book turned out. And I was really happy with the way everything dovetails. So, I try to, I try, I always want the next book I write to be the best book I've written. I don't hold anything back. I don't say, oh, well, this is for book four. I can't do this. So for me, it's going to feel like a challenge to outdo Stealing Hearts. I feel like, damn it, I did my best. How am I going to beat that? So, but it's good. I feel like my readers will get their money's worth and they'll enjoy, get a meaty, juicy romance and some suspense and get that catharsis at the end.
All right, well, let's talk Stealing Heart. So
Okay.
it came out January 30th, 2025. Tropes are single dad, age gap, marriage of convenience, best friend's little sister. It is small town and kind of a slow burn. Like there's some action, but not a lot. And then, I mean, once they start, there's a lot, but then they
Well,
kind
see,
of
I think
heat it up for a while.
it's a faster burn because they get naked in the hot tub pretty fast. But that's just me. I know people have different levels of gauging that sort of
So
thing.
my gauge is when there's full on
Oh yeah, so
contact.
no, I don't tend to do the deed full on till
Later in the books,
usually it's usually around halfway through the book. But
I
I
have
promise.
noticed that with you. There's always something that happens, but the full on, like you like to tease it, and then you're like, no, I'm gonna hold back just a little bit.
Because if you put your best sex scene at the beginning, where do they have to go from there? So I
This
feel
is
like
true.
sex scenes are a reflection of their of the evolution of their relationship. And if they're banging in act one, how are you going to outdo that? What's their journey going to be like? Now, I have had character. I co-wrote a book. It was called Surprise Baby, and I'm terrible with names and titles, so it'll take me a second sometimes when I have to like roll through my mental Rolodex and figure out what the hell I'm talking about. But in Surprise Baby, they did do the deed early on, and she gets pregnant and she hates him, but they were stranded on a in a on a at a cabin during a snowstorm. And so then they had to come back together and deal with their lives. But I guess I do prefer a slow burn, slow-ish burn. I don't want to say slow burn, but
Yeah,
slow-ish.
slowish.
Slow-ish.
But the romance and the chemistry is not the slow, it's just you're building up to
Right,
the
exactly. Exactly.
So one thing that I have noticed in like a lot of your books, though, you are a big fan of the single parent pregnancy trope. What draws you to those?
Well, I was raised by a single parent,
Okay.
and I guess I know the stress they live and the struggles they experience. But I don't know. I guess I just kind of fell into it when I wrote Shameless. He adopts his baby niece, and then the second one it was a single father, and then the third one there is like a father-ish aspect. But when I wrote the Varsity Dads, I thought, how can I combine my favorite tropes here? And I thought it has to be single dad because I really enjoyed writing that for Texas Nights, and I hadn't seen college athletes who were single dads, so I wanted to do something fresh with that trope. I really couldn't tell you why I write single dads, except I love reading those books, and I don't know. I just kind of fell into it and it's become my thing. You don't really realize that you're gonna one day write a book and everyone's gonna just want that book over and over in different variety, variations with you. And it's something I can write again and again. So,
Well, there's so many different ways to be the single parent. And I
right.
think that's one of the nice things about that trope is like it's not a clean cut thing.
Right.
So we have Rhett and Paige. Paige is the little sister of Rhett's best friend
Yes.
who has passed away. So we don't get that older brother dynamic in this book. But so Rhett is kind of grumpy, kind of an asshole,
Yeah.
which
He's
I
probably the biggest
honestly,
asshole I've written, I have to say.
and I love an asshole. Like, honestly, like an asshole hero is my like catnip. So
Yeah.
I was a big fan. For a little bit, I was like, oh, I don't know if he's going to turn this around at all
Yeah.
because, like, I like the asshole, but he has to have like
Yeah.
that moment. I was
Yeah,
like, ooh, Rhett, I don't
of
know about you. Because he's a lot.
course. Yeah. He has a lot to handle. And maybe I overdid it with him, but I don't know. I just really wanted that for the first book of the series. He's the oldest brother. He kept the fort. He kept the ranch together, held the fort down while his father was an alcoholic, and he has four younger brothers. So I just think it fits his personality. And it's not that he didn't care about Paige. He did a lot, but
He's
he's
just so focused on taking care of everybody else around him that he forgets that they're like that nurture needs to be present also. Not with his kids. Like, he is wonderful and nurturing and loving to his kids. He just forgets that, like, sometimes the brothers and Paige needs that too.
Rhett, I don't know. He's got my asshole of the year award for sure. But I think he redeems himself at the end,
He
and
does, yes.
it was a really fun dynamic to write. So
Well, because Paige, like, she is a little, she comes home with her tail between her legs a little bit. Like, she's not living her best life when
No.
she goes back to her house. Well, excuse me, her hometown. But when she gets there, though, like, you realize, like, it was not all like rainbows and sunshine for her there either. Like, her stepmother is horrible. Her stepbrother is kind of out of touch with like anything but himself. And so, like, and her brother, who is the one person she could really count on, is no longer around. So, but she does have the most amazing best friend, who I love
Bailey.
so much, Bailey. And then Bailey's mom is definitely there for her. So she has those people in her life that truly care for her. And Rhett always has in his own way. But she, so the book opens up and she's like telling Rhett that his soon-to-be wife is cheating on him, and he basically loses it on her. And so she's like, okay, I'm done. I'm taking a step back. Like, you are dead to me, essentially.
And then
And
she
then
wants to
we,
run and hide from him for the rest of her life. She
which,
plans
I
to
mean,
never talk
she,
to him, to run and avoid him and his new wife for all
Well, and
eternity.
she does for a really long time, too. It's like 7 years or something like that. And it's like, and like her brother has passed away, and her brother like asked Rhett to like check in and like take care of her. And I mean, he tries in his own way, but Paige is still like,
He
you, I'm
calls
done.
her. He wants to track her down at college, in Charming, which is the fictional town where we first meet her in Varsity Dads, and she just doesn't want to talk to him. She's
No.
not ready. So
Well, and that's one of those things, like, with this, like, their relationship is like she still like has like harbors these feelings for him, but she's so angry at the same time because he looked at her as though like she was insignificant and what she said was insignificant. But then we also find out that when that happened, other things like fell apart around her in her town. And so it's like choices that she made, which were good choices, ended up not being good for her in the long run. And so she's really jaded by that experience.
She is. And I love their first interaction where he finds her sleeping in her car and yanks her out and throws her over his shoulder and carries her to safety, you know.
While she's like barely clothed.
Oh, she's barely clothed. Love it. I love awkward romantic interactions. That's my bread and
Well,
butter.
And he gets so mad at her about it. And she's like, but you have no say over me. Like, you are being a bully. Like, I do not want to deal with you. And she has a good relationship with his brothers. Like, Mav, like, who is one of her good friends who she was at college with. Like, she has no problem interacting with him or Beau or Jace. It's just, it is him. Like, he is the antithesis of everything she wants to deal with. But then the ranch is in trouble. He's dealing with his traitorous ex-wife. And so he needs a loan, and things happen, and he ends up getting married. And Paige, unfortunately, maybe steps up because she doesn't want to see him lose something that she knows he cares about so much.
She loves the family. She loves him deep down. She just can't really admit it. And she's willing to put herself in this situation to help them.
Well, and she cr like really creates this loving environment for his kids because, like, as you read the story, like, you find out that their lives are not smooth. Transitions between the parents' houses are not smooth. And I mean, it's a very realistic thing where, like, you can, there, like, I've read
Child of
books where they,
divorce.
And like, I've read books where the co-parenting goes extremely well and they are very good. And then I've read books where the co-parenting does not go well because that is real life. Like, you have great co-parents and you have terrible co-parents. And I felt like this was a really realistic version of the anxiety that comes like forth in that thing. And she really tries to like be a soft landing for the boys.
And I know people always ask me, how much of your real life do you put in your books? And I'll say an aspect of my life in this book is the kids getting sick, transitioning between households. I found it really traumatic when I was a child, and I would throw up. I would get sick. I would, come down with a fever. And, my parents would argue back and forth and blame the other, trying to protect me. But it was, in retrospect, just the stress of moving back and forth and having to witness them so upset with each other. And so that's a real thing. So when Rhett gets that unfortunate phone call on his fake honeymoon, when he's just been intimate with Paige, a step he shouldn't have done had he really wanted to maintain this business arrangement. That's something that's happened to me with getting sick. And so I put a lot of little tidbits of myself and friends and experiences in books, and that was one of them.
Well, and with Rhett, like, he makes a lot of missteps. Like, he does it out of the good of his heart and where he feels like he's making the right choice, but
And when you see who
it
raised him,
backfires.
it makes sense. When you see he didn't have a mom around and his father was an alcoholic asshole who barked orders at everyone, and you see more of that in Maverick's book, which is next, then his personality makes sense.
Well, and like, as you like hear, like, get the backstory and like you understand, like, that it was him and the brothers for the most part. And it's like they didn't have that soft when they were growing up. So, like, he never understood the soft. And like, he has a horrible choice of an ex-wife who is not soft and who was very wanting. And so, like, he did what he needed to do to make her happy, but nothing he did was enough. And so, like, he has this like thought process that it doesn't matter if Paige says she's happy, no matter what he does, like, he can't make her happy, whether or not she's saying she's content or not. And that's one of the big things that I really liked about this book is the fact that, like, she is happy there. She wants to be there. Like, she's creating this life, but he keeps pushing her out.
Well, and he doesn't want her to give up on her dream. So he saw her as a child doing tumbling and cheerleading. And he thinks that's her lifelong dream to go coach at an elite camp, which is what her goal was at the beginning of the book and what she tells him she wants to do. So he doesn't want her to just settle on him and living at the ranch when he thinks that maybe deep down that's really, she would be selling herself short. So, and he doesn't convey that in the best way, but that's where his heart is at.
Yeah, communication is not his strong suit,
No.
but there's a great cast of characters that you've created where I'm assuming we're going to get all of the brothers' books.
Hopefully.
And Bailey and Maverick are
They're nice.
next.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, excuse me.
And it's a
So,
single mom book.
ooh.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because there's something we find out at the end of this book. I forgot about that for a second. But yeah, this is going to be exciting. Well, because that's one thing too, is like these people have been friends for a long time, and Bailey and Mav have like really liked each other, but like he's been off doing all the cheerleaders and things like that.
Right,
And so
right,
she's
right.
like, all right, I'm done. Like, I have been essentially waiting for something to happen. And like, so she's like, she starts dating and doing her own thing, which I'm sure she has done like for a while, but it kind of comes to a head. So,
Right.
but we'll have to wait for that one.
This summer.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Lex, for stopping and chatting, stealing hearts, and all the author things with me.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.